From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour will be made on Saturday, July 20th, when the Rochester Pride Parade and Festival get new locations. This year's events will start with the parade at the intersection of South Avenue and Science Parkway, and from there the parade will head north, eventually arriving at the Pride Festival. The festival this year will be held at Highland Park, in the part of the park known as Bikerk Park. And there's a picnic as well. It's coming up on this Sunday, so there's a lot to talk about. This year's Pride Festival and these events happen amidst the backdrop of both progress and concern for the LGBTQ community. National gay rights advocacy organizations have been warning, in particular, about major changes in federal policy that could happen depending on the outcomes of upcoming elections. We'll talk about some of that this hour, and we'll introduce you to the grand and honorary marshals of the parade who are with us. Sam Brett is back with us. You know Sam as Sam or Samantha Vega, depending on the day. And Sam is 2024 Pride Grand Marshal, also helping put together this picnic for this coming Sunday. Welcome back. It's nice to see you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. The honorary marshal is Giovanna Davis, the 2024 Pride honorary marshal. Welcome. Thank you for being with us here.
Thank you for having me here.
Welcome to Terrence Pleasant, Director of Community Engagement at the Mocha Center at Trillium Health. Terrence, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And Jake Purcell, Donor Engagement Officer at Trillium Health. Hello, Jake. Thanks for being here.
Hey, Evan.
So a lot of events, and what we're going to do this hour is we'll kind of walk through what's coming up so the community is aware of that. And then we're going to talk, everyone's got sort of a different perspective on what they are seeing, what they're maybe concerned about, what's sort of good, what is what the horizon looks like in their world. I mean, there's a lot to kind of get through there. But let me start with Sam, because the first event that is on our radar is the picnic this coming Sunday. And you got a great forecast and everything is...
We do.
It's going to be nasty here in Rochester this afternoon, but the rest of the week is great. And what's coming up on Sunday?
Listen, this is the 52nd annual Pride Picnic. So we started in the 70s with the Pride Picnic, and it's back at Genesee Valley Park again. So we're excited to do that. It's just a very relaxed, chill, bring your own food and or beverage at the Genesee Valley Park. And it's just a great event for the whole afternoon. And proceeds from the event go to benefit the Rainbow Seniors.
It starts when?
It's noon to 6 p.m. Yes, on Sunday.
Noon to 6. And can you believe it's been 52 years now for this event here? In 2024, how different does 2024 feel compared to, say, the mid or early 70s, do you think, for events like this?
Well, I mean, like, we always thought that Pride was initially a riot, right? And the first Pride event in Rochester was a sit-in. They called it the Gay End in 1971. So it comes from that moment of protest and advancement of human civil rights and human rights. And I think we're still making that fight a little bit. We got a little relaxed the past few years, but I think we're waking up again.
You said the first event was known as a gay-in.
The gay-in, yes.
And Sam, yesterday on this program, we had Domingo Garcia, who's a longtime leader in the Latino community. He's 83 years old now, lives in Florida. He was back in Rochester picking up a proclamation, being honored by the Monroe County Legislature. If you were a Rochesterian in the 60s, 70s, 80s, he helped co-found Ibero in the 60s. He was doing work with the Puerto Rican community and dealing with police community relations after he was roughed up in the 1960s. He went on to have both a business career, a government career, an activist career. And if you were in Rochester in the 60s, 70s, 80s, you would absolutely know him. Today in 2024, there's a lot of people who don't know who Domingo Garcia was, and that was very eye-opening for us. It's one reason I think knowing that history is important. And so one of the first things you mentioned was 52 years of this picnic. And those early days when it was different. And how important is it for you to understand the history as far back as you can go and understand what this community has been through?
Right. It's a lot of a history of oppression in that. I mean, if you look at pictures from the early picnic, the group pictures are people's backs facing the camera. So you don't see faces from the picnic.
And that's for their own protection.
From their own protection. People could get fired. They could be outed to their families, et cetera. So I think there was a huge oppression at the time. And I mean, it was organized by the Gay Liberation Front of Rochester back then. And that has evolved. It goes through different organizations. And right now, the custodians of the picnic is the Rainbow Seniors, which actually has some of the original organizers of the Pride Picnic. So I'm glad to be in good company with that, because I've learned so much from Bob Crystal, who we've had here on the show before, and many others to learn the history and the legacy of what it means to be gay. And in this case, now we say queer because we're more inclusive as well. And how that community has lifted itself to support or to expand and support all the others as well.
Some of those early pioneers and activists have been on this program, to your point. And one common refrain that I've heard over the years, Sam, is that it's important to acknowledge progress because it is better than it was in many, many ways. It is also important to not take your eye off where it needs to change. But, you know, one person said to me years ago, we need not say this is the worst it's ever been because it has been worse. And a lot of people who came before us went through hell. But that doesn't mean that there are people today who don't go through hell and that aren't really struggling. And I wonder how you balance those mentalities, trying to honor the progress without feeling sort of complacent or making sure that you recognize what you still have not achieved.
I think we have to recognize that we are all evolving and learning as we go also. So my experience is only my experience, right, and what I see. And there are other folks who, you know, the Gay Liberation Movement, Gay Liberation Front of Rochester did a lot of great things back when, but it really almost excluded the trans experience, for example. And that goes with the Liberation Front the Gay Liberation Front in New York City and many other cities. So I think it's important to see that the movement has grown and learned to embrace others that are part of our own identity and grow that and see and learn from their experiences and really listen to what the history of oppression is, what it was for us and what it could be for many others. As an immigrant right now, for me, you know, my partner 12 years ago, I couldn't marry, right? So I couldn't benefit of marriage, you know, benefits of being a citizen back then. So, and it has changed a little bit, but, you know, do I have the same rights as trans folks out there? I don't think so. I think I have quite a privilege of being a cis person.
Well, let's talk to the marshals about what it means to be a marshal coming up at the at Pride. And the 2024 Pride Grand Marshal is Sam Brett and the honorary marshal, Giovanna Davis. Sam, did you tell them, you better make me Grand Marshal? I've done too much work. Was this like a big... Did you commandeer the Grand Marshal? No.
I did an interview with Giovanna earlier this week, and I was talking about, like, I was nominated before, and I declined it because we had drama with the executive director of the organization at the time. And I was like, until you apologize to me and the other people you're affected, I am not taking this on. But I've reflected on that, and I think it also gives me an opportunity to give the voice to folks like me who are often not seen in the public eye as representative of the queer community. And so for me, it's also like a celebration of not just the work that I've done in the past 25 years, but also those organizations that I've served. Like, you know, I was in the board director of Trillium. I was a board president for MoCA for a few years. Also, I helped raise over $3 million for Trillium Health AIDS Rochester back in the days. Also, the Gay Alliance of Genesee Valley. So many things that we've done. And I think it's not about the work that I've done, but my work reflects what these organizations contribute to our community.
And so there were past years where it wouldn't really feel like a fit for you to have been Grand Marshal, yeah?
I was too busy organizing.
And now what does it mean to you to have this role here?
It's great. It's humbling, but also exciting to be recognized after, you know, being in the recognizing others. I've learned from so many people over the years, and I think it's great. It's a good recognition to their work as well.
Giovanna, honorary marshal, what's that mean to you?
It's an honor because we are a part of history right now because I'm the first Black trans woman to be honorary marshal in this Pride Parade and to stand with Sam as a Latinx person together in this. It's a phenomenal feeling, and it's a progressive feeling. So it's something I'm very, I take seriously, and I adore my community for seeing me and allowing my visibility to have that type of power.
So let me ask you something, Giovanna, that is probably inevitably a little clumsy, but I'll do my best to try to be as sincere with this question as I can be. Mm-hmm. You know, you heard Sam talk about how the movement has really had to evolve, especially since the early 70s. And to me, how that hits my ears is this is a movement for equality that in the early days was often about gay white men, not as inclusive as it could be. And for that reason, there have been, at least in my 10 years of hosting the show and having conversations like this, there have been some moments of division or questioning about whether, you know, do we want to unite and have events together? Should they be separated? Do we feel truly united? Do we feel recognized? Was there time in your own past where you might have questioned whether you wanted to be an honorary marshal with this event?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Because I have a firm belief in the way I run my organization, the way I stand within my principles as a Black woman of trans experience, that there's strength in numbers. There's unity in numbers. And those occurrences in the past are where they belong in the past. And a lot of us have heard distorted history where trans folks were not there during those fights, when in fact a lot of us were actually the leaders of that fight, but didn't get the publicity because we weren't the right skin tone or we weren't seen as equals in that fight. So no, I never at any time thought of feeling we should be separate in any way when it came to community unity.
How united do you feel now?
We have a ways to go, but I definitely feel, like I said, there's a progression and it's moving in the right direction. And today, that progression is needed more than ever. Like I said before, strength in numbers, and we have to come together and see ourselves as one community to fight against those who want to fight against us.
Sam mentioned in the early picnics, people would turn their backs to the camera just because they knew that they could be fired. They knew that there could be consequences in their social lives and their work lives. And, you know, I think of sort of the spectrum of what it means to be part of the LGBTQ community. And I'm often told, again, I'm just relaying what I hear. And someone's not trying to appropriate any experience. I'm just trying to listen. Mm-hmm. I'm often told that, for example, being a Black trans woman is a very different experience and a very challenging experience even today. And I wonder now, do you worry about employment, relationships, et cetera? Are you confident that your own future is secure, that you'll have what you need, that you'll be supported in the way that you need?
Do I worry about it personally?
Yeah,
no.
You don't.
But I do worry about it for other members of my community,
okay,
other trans men and women, non-binary individuals who are out there navigating through their lives and dealing with the struggles and experiences within their lives. So, yes, I worry, just not necessarily for myself, because I do believe that visibility is our revolution now. And the more that we're visible, the more people understand that we deserve to be here as much as they do.
Where do you think your own personal confidence and your lack of concern for yourself, where does that come from?
I always have concern for myself. It's just not in with that narrative.
Okay.
But my confidence comes from my own life experiences. And we talk about privilege with certain individuals, but we all have a titch of privilege within our lives. And I feel that I was blessed to have a certain privilege where I didn't have to worry about those things. But with that privilege comes a responsibility. And I understood the responsibility that I had a duty to my people, to my community. Not just trans folks, not just non-binary folks, but Black and brown individuals in my community who have not experienced the same things that I have experienced in a positive way. So I found my purpose in assisting them where I could to help elevate and better help them better in their lives.
Giovanna, you're the Pride Honorary Marshal because your resume's got a lot of interesting things, but tell us about WAVE Women Incorporated.
WAVE Women Incorporated, I started 4 years ago for Black and brown trans women in the community. We work with social justice reform. Help with housing. I'm a nurse, so my big thing is healthcare. I do a lot of work with area people in area hospitals regarding gender-affirming care and surgeries and stuff like that. We also help when we can with mutual aid, helping with food and clothes and stuff like that. So we're a community that is for the people that reaches out and helps where we're needed.
Your resume is really interesting. I mean, you're a member of the University of Rochester Community Advisory Board. Mm-hmm. You're a participant of Metro Justice. You're an ordained minister. Mm-hmm. What do you not do? How do you find time for all of this, Dubai?
I prioritize, and it's when you do what you love, it doesn't feel like work. So I go where I'm needed and do what I can when I can.
When were you ordained as a minister?
That was 3 years ago.
Okay, and mm-hmm. why did you decide that was something you wanted to do?
I've always been a spiritual person. I always felt a closeness with a higher power. And so many times we're told that we're not loved by that higher power. And I love to stand in the fact that I can share that love and let people know that you are loved, those in this community, and there's nothing that can stop that love as long as you open your arms and accept it.
When you see, even if it's not directed at you, mm-hmm. but when you see bigotry, hatred, does that ever shake your feeling that there must be a higher power, that maybe there is a God, maybe there is a something bigger than us? Does that ever shake that?
Absolutely. And I know that it is. And I know that there's a purpose, but it doesn't shake me to deter me away from it. It shakes me to fight even harder, to educate myself even more, and to share that knowledge as much as I can.
Yeah, I mean, I think when I think about suffering mm-hmm. in the world, I mean, if it's many, many forms, that's probably when I think about true suffering, pain, discrimination, poverty, loss, children getting cancer. I mean, that's probably what has shook me the most in my own spirituality, mm-hmm. because logically, I start thinking with my very, very human brain, and I think, if there is something omnipotent or omniscient, how does this happen? And I don't know that I know the answer, and I kind of move around a lot on that, but you're still a spiritual person.
And sometimes it's not for you to know the answer in that moment.
Yeah, I take that point. Yeah.
Sometimes it's for you just to understand it's a human experience and to roll with the punches, but never waver your faith.
How many people does WAVE serve?
We serve pretty much as many as we possibly can within the community. I mean, we are a statewide organization. We do work with people in New York City, the New Pride Agenda. We have worked with people in Albany. We've worked with people as far as South Carolina. So, yeah, we are a statewide organization, so the numbers are there.
We're talking to, you've been hearing from Javonna Davis, 2024 Pride Honorary Marshal coming up here with Rochester Pride Month here. Sam Brett, the 2024 Pride Grand Marshal. The picnic is on Sunday, noon to 6, I think is what Sam said, at Genesee Valley Park. 52 years of the Pride picnic. Genesee Valley Park on Sunday, noon to 6. And then on Saturday, the 20th, that's two Saturdays from now, you have the parade that goes right to the festival. Parade starts at 11, everybody. Is that right? 11 o'clock, the corner of South Avenue and, I have this, Science Parkway. So South Avenue, the parade heads north and it goes to Highland Park in the part of the park known as Bykirk. That's where the festival's happening. And the festival, I think, also goes till 6 o'clock. That sound right?
Yeah, and it actually starts at 11 as well.
Okay.
So that will run kind of from 11 to 6 in tandem with the start of the parade.
There you go. So, and By the way, Jake Purcell, who's Donor Engagement Officer at Trillium, new locations for the parade and festival, just a better fit this year?
Yes. In many ways, it's a hot button topic. It's come up a lot. And, you know, I just always emphasize that none of these decisions are made in a vacuum. You know, a lot of people have been consulted, and there are so many factors that work into it. And we also understand change is hard. People don't love it. There's a comfort. There's an affinity to the former spot. But, you know, I always stress that, you know, Pride as a whole doesn't really, it represents our community, but it doesn't really belong to anyone or any community. And I think that's even true with location. You know, the fact that it was in one specific part of the city, why not shift it to another area that might tap into a different neighborhood, might bring some different people or new people out to it? So I love the idea of having it somewhere else. And really when it comes down to it, the main factor was size and participation. This parade, this festival has grown over the last few years exponentially. I think just to give some perspective, if you were there last year, there were about 173 participant groups that marched down that parade on Park. This year, we already have 242 participant groups. Park Ave really wouldn't have sustained that. It would have been extremely long. And so I think there are just, that's one of the larger factors. And I think just also attendance with Cobbs Hill, we needed more space. We needed more amenities. And Bykirk was honestly really the most obvious choice in that it puts on a really good sized festival. It's happened before, you know, Lilac is successful. So we thought, okay, let's try it. But nothing is ever written in stone. You know, we're going to see how this goes. And there, like I said, it's constantly being evaluated. It's passing through so many hands, but this really was a natural good fit. I'm going to also advocate for the space in that it is shorter. It can potentially be the hottest weekend of the year. So starting it earlier and having a shorter route actually benefits health in many ways. I think the parade should probably wrap up faster than maybe it has in the past. The street portion on South is wider. I actually like even the way it's set up. If you look at a lot of the sidewalks along South, there's green space behind it. There's these good areas that people can actually sit and, you know, enjoy rather than, you know, people in many ways on Park were almost kind of falling into the street. It made me a little nervous. It was a little narrow. So I just think I just ask people to give it a chance. I think it's a really great fit. Everything's been going really well so far. I think we need to experience it, and we'll reevaluate once it happens.
It's been at Park for how long?
I think 10 years. Yeah, I think the last 10 like has that. Been. But, yeah. You know, it's funny because I know Sam and I are trying to add up our years collectively that we've been involved with it. But it's funny because, I mean, I think there are certain people, and especially younger people, that that's all they know.
Absolutely.
Where I'm like, I marched down South Ave before in the parade. And, you know, it's been on East. Wasn't it on East one year as well?
It was up Goodman. It went down East. My first Pride Parade was down Main Street to High Falls.
Exactly. So it's not like it's always been there. It was for a while. I get all the wonderful things about it, but sometimes it's just time to shake it up.
And Jake, you know, I think there's actually something really affirming and even some beauty in the resistance of people who either live on Park or even business owners who really wanted you there. I mean, that's very validating in some way, isn't it?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think there are businesses that are sort of mourning, for lack of better words, mourning the loss. But I also know there are some businesses that are thrilled it's not being held there. I know there are a lot of residents that are not going to miss it there. You know, it's a big event. There are a lot of people, you know, and I think people can be protective of their street and whatnot for whichever reason, you know? So I think there are trade-offs, you know, at the same time, do I like that maybe some of the businesses over on South and in the South Wedge might receive a little more attention? Sure. You know, and again, I think this belongs to the whole city, to the whole community. Why not allow it, you know, to kind of breathe in some other spaces as well? You know, look at the proximity of this event now to what is it? College, the U of R.
College Town.
College Town. I almost said College Center. Yeah, College Town, you know, so.
We're all so old.
We are so old. I know. I mean, Sam, God, how long have we known each other?
Oh, gosh.
Decades. No,
you're mothers.
You just turned 25, so. and that's the thing is we, you know, and I understand again, people's histories are what they are, but we go way back to what I mean, decades of this, and it's always been shifting, moving on a continuum since one that I've been to.
You're looking over, so Sam, I'll ask you as the Grand Marshal. I mean, you've heard some of. Controversy is a big word. I mean, of course, there's some controversy with this and some tough feelings to work through. But as you've said, it's been a great decade on Park. Maybe you go back there in the future. How do you feel about this change?
Well, change is hard. I do wish that it was a little longer for sure. But I just, you know, try to balance that with like Highland Park is more accessible for people with mobility concerns. There's a lot more shade, more green spaces. So the festival side is just much better. The infrastructure is there. It's a much easier lift, I feel, doing it there than at Cops Hill that didn't have anything, that we had to build everything from the ground up. Having been on the committee that started at Cops Hill the past, 8 years ago. So, but I think it's great. I mean, change is hard, but here we are, you know, 50 years of pride.
Let me grab Terrence here because we're going to talk in a moment about what the Mocha Center's been doing. But how do you feel about some of these changes? Get real close to that microphone. Pull it closer. Sure, sure. Terrence. Yeah.
This is my second year being involved with some of the pride planning. So I'm excited about it. I'm excited that we are able to have more participants. We have a lot more organizations that we are able to invite in. So we have more organizations of color that are able to be a part. Some of the smaller organizations, they're going to have more visibility by marching in the parade, by being able to table, by being able to vend and connect to the community. So that's what excites me, some of the smaller organizations getting some of that exposure. So, and it's because we are able to be in a bigger space and kind of like spread out a little bit more and invite more people in. So to me, bigger is always better. So
okay. And Terrence, by the way, is the Director of Community Engagement at the Mocha Center at Trillium Health. Why don't you let people know again what the Mocha Center does?
The Mocha Center, we are at 470 West Main Street. We offer HIV testing, STI testing. We do a lot of programming and events that is geared towards the Black and Brown LGBT community. But we are an inclusive space, so we do events that it's geared towards the Black and Brown community, but everyone's invited. So
what has been sort of either the growth or the trajectory of Mocha in terms of the community need and then what you're able to do?
We have seen extreme growth like over the last year and a half. We now have a full service food pantry. We are doing we're serving since so many people. I just it's so hard to kind of like put in words the amount of growth that we're seeing. Like we're servicing more trans men, more trans women. So our relationship with the trans community has grown. Again, we have the food pantry. We have a workforce development program that we started in partnership with the Human Rights Campaign that was very successful. So we're going to do another cohort of that in the fall. It's always so much going on at the Mocha Center. So we have a womb fire series that's focusing on individuals that have wombs. And so, of course, again, since we're inclusive, it's geared towards trans mass individuals, cis women, focusing on womb-related issues such as endometriosis, fibroids, things of that nature. So we have specialists come in and talk about these issues. It's always so much going on at the Mocha Center. And so then also we're going to be on the main stage at Pride, which is very exciting. Hasn't been done before. We're going to have a big party tent at Pride. So then we get to work with people like Sam and Giovanna. So
who's running the party tent at Pride?
I will be running it. I will be one of the people that's running it. But I work with an amazing team. So, yeah.
You know, when we talked about the evolution over 5-6 decades and a movement that is that maybe was pretty narrow in the early days, it seems to me that Mocha itself is a piece of evidence that this is a movement that is not nearly so narrow anymore.
Absolutely.
Do you see it that way?
Oh, absolutely. Because, again, you know, Black and Brown people, you know, our history in the movement, you know, has always been, we've always had history, but the history has always kind of been questionable. And when you talk about, you know, Stonewall, it's the Black and Brown history is usually always pointed to two people, Sylvia. What's her last name? It's right on the tip of my tongue.
Rivera.
Thank you. I knew that. It was right on the tip of my tongue.
And Marsha.
And Marsha P. Johnson. And but it's like they weren't the only two Black and Brown people that were there. You know, so who else was there? You know, those other names are forgotten. Those other faces are forgotten. But when you think about the AIDS epidemic in the 80s, you know, the Black and Brown people, we were impacted by that, you know, at large and alarming numbers, you know. And then the drug epidemic came along, and the poor Black and Brown communities, we were impacted by that. And we didn't have access to treatment. We didn't have access to care. And so because of that, you know, AIDS grew, HIV grew. And, you know, here we are. Thank God, you know, for places like Trillium that we have access to care. We have wonderful providers. But we've come such a long way. And so I feel like, you know, the Black and Brown community, our history is there, but I feel like we've had to fight for our history to be there. We've had to fight for our place in that history. And you know, I would thank God for Sylvia, thank God for Marsha, but there were other people there. You know, that there were other voices there, you know, so.
Let me ask you about another aspect of this, and keeping with the tradition of the hour, it's going to be a little clumsy, but
absolutely.
I'm going to do my best here, Terrence. You know, in any community, there are sometimes cultures, norms, pressures. So I don't want to overgeneralize, but I want to ask you if part of the growth that you are seeing at MoCA, and maybe this is optimistic of me, is it a growing willingness of, say, cis gay Black men, of Black trans people, to be willing to number one, be out,
yeah,
and number two, to seek services when they, yeah, need to? Because I don't want to overgeneralize, yeah, and say, well, you can't be this in this community,
yeah,
but I know there are pressures and challenges, and we've talked about, yeah, that before. Is it getting easier or more of the norm to seek those services, be out?
Honestly, I think community is so important, and I think comfort plays a role in it. And I think with the team that's at MoCA, we have a way of making people feel welcome. You know, we are so non-judgmental, and people see me out in the community. Community members see me out in the community. They see other team members of MoCA out in the community. And we're regular people anyways, but they don't see us as, oh my gosh, like, I don't want them to know I'm having sex, or I don't want them to know I'm out here, you know.
Sure. Yeah.
So they feel comfortable with us, with to say, like, yay, I did this weekend, and I feel like I need to be tested, or, you know, I had a hookup, and, you know, my partner told me that, you know, they have something going on, so I want to be safe, I want to come in and get tested. And I think that speaks to the relationship building that we do. I think, yeah, that speaks to these relationships that we have with community members, where they feel connected with us. And I hold that. You know, that's special to me. And I think that's special to every single member of my team. So
I know people really value that. And just want to remind you what we're talking about this hour. It is not only Pride Month, but you've got the Pride Picnic coming up on Sunday. You've got the Parade and Festival coming up on two Saturdays from now, Saturday, July 20th. And the conversation this hour focusing on not only the people involved in bringing these events to you, but the work they're doing in this community and what they have been experiencing. And I just, but before I move on to some other points here, I just want to kind of put a cap on the conversation we've been having with Terrence Pleasant, the Director of Community Engagement at the MoCA Center at Trillium Health, who's been talking about relationship building and what that means, yeah, to people who are not only need services, yeah, but sometimes need someone to talk to, need someone,
oh, absolutely,
like you, who's been, oh, there, been there, done that.
Absolutely.
And it sounds to me like at least, this is the optimistic side of me, but I want to believe that everyone is going to be able to find someone who can love them and listen to them.
Oh, absolutely. And that's why you have the MoCA Center. That's why you have WAVE Women. That's why you have Sam, Samantha,
you know,
I'm not
connected. That's why you have Jake out there raising money, you know, so that MoCA, we can do what we do over at MoCA, and you know, so we can do the things that we do over at Trillium. And that's why we have events like Pride, to bring everyone together, at least for one day. You know, I don't stop being Black and gay on July 21st. Javonna doesn't stop being Black and trans on July 21st. Sam doesn't stop performing and being Latinx on July 21st. We live our lives 365. It's you know, because it's who we are. So, but for one day, we all get to come together and celebrate as a community. And so that's what Pride is all about.
Now, Terrence mentioned Jake out there raising money, donor engagement officer at Trillium Health. How's the work these days?
The work is good. The work is always really tough. I mean, it's just you know, when you start looking at retention and turnover rates with fundraising, it's high. I think, you know, and I've been in fundraising now for almost 5 years, only Trillium for a year and a half. The best possible thing you can do, though, is work for an organization that you really believe in the mission. I couldn't believe in the mission for Trillium Health anymore, and the work that, you know, everybody's doing. And, you know, honestly, to partner with Dr. William Valeni as much as I do and how often on the daily, honestly, sometimes it's going to be one of the greatest joys I've had because of, you know, his history and what he's done for our community and for the health community as a whole. So it's going well. And, you know, I honestly think there are some of the greatest, most loyal, most passionate donors to Trillium. They've been through a lot. They've seen a lot. They've lost a lot, either themselves or family. So there's a definite, very emotional connection to the work, which I hate saying makes my life easier, but it does. You know, when there's a personal connection, that's usually where people want to give. So I think, you know, making sure that the history is alive, what we're currently doing is alive. You know, I think I still have conversations on the daily that people don't realize all that Trillium does. The fact that, you know, we obviously have our history where we came from, but, you know, now that there's primary care, we have a GYN center, you know, the fact that we have food pantries, the pop-ups that Terrence had mentioned, you know, we have 3 pop-up food pantry locations at our different sites. These are things that people just still don't know. So that's a lot of what I'm doing is getting out there and just informing people of all the services we have and just sort of keeping that connection to our organization within the community, because I feel so strongly and so deeply about it. So it's a matter of just keeping the word out.
I mean, I think there's some parallels. I mean, part of what Jake is talking about, how hard the work can be, but how that's mitigated when you really believe in what you're doing.
Yeah.
And go ahead. Yeah.
Well, and not just that, but like, I can't imagine wanting to be anywhere else but our organization, in that the people that tend to gravitate towards the organization. I've met the most amazing people in the year and a half I've been there. I've learned so much in the year and a half I've been there. About 3 months ago, we actually launched an employee resource group, and I'm leading our LGBTQ+ group, and just the schools of thought that happen within that room. There are 12 people. We get together, and it's sort of mind-blowing every day. And I think just when you think you know everything, the best thing you can do is show up to work the next day, because you're going to learn that much more. You know, I just think I've been enlightened by every interaction I have, from a donor standpoint to an internal colleague standpoint. You know, Terrence and I actually did our orientation together. We were together from day one, and his friendship and partnership has been, you know, life-changing for me in many ways. Just what I've learned, the access to information, the fact that we come to work, I think for the most part, we're all willing to be very vulnerable. Because I think a lot of the work we do is very emotional. It's very taxing. But I think allowing yourself to be vulnerable with your colleagues, that's where the growth really happens. And I just find I grow daily.
Well, I mean, what I can certainly relate to is this idea that, you know, most people in their teens or 20s, they say, what are you going to do for career? Well, I'm going to, you know, raise money. I'm going to ask people for money. That can be really, really tough. But one of the reasons that at times, even in public journalism, I feel pretty confident in doing that is because what else are we going to do here if we don't have this? I mean, and sometimes that's probably how you feel about Trillium. What is this community going to be if you don't have this, right?
Yeah. I was recruited into development fundraising 5 years ago. I honestly had no idea what it was. I was like, what? You want me to what? They kept saying the word development. I'm like, I'm developing what? So I was unfamiliar with it, but have quickly learned and appreciated the value, because, I mean, margins are thin in healthcare. They really are. And so often the must-haves ideally are taken care of, but the nice to or the would be great to just can't be accounted for. And that's really where donor support steps in. So it's a game changer. And I don't, you know, thinking ahead to where we could be in a year politically, things could be very different. And I think this conversation could even be different, and if not more essential, going into what we could potentially be a year from now.
Well, so that's a good sort of entry point to me asking all of you. I'll start with you then, Jake. What worries you most that is on the horizon or could be on the horizon? I'll start with Jake.
I'm a imaginative thinker, so I sometimes can just destroy myself with this because I do think the worst, because I like history and I value history and I know many histories, and that the trajectory we're on is not unfamiliar. It has happened before. In possibly the worst of scenarios. You know, I'm aware of this little Project 25 that I don't take unseriously. There are a lot of fears of where we could be, you know, or just that's possibly the extreme. But, you know, I was born in 1979. I remember what my life was even like in the 90s and early 2000s when marriage wasn't legal and I was sort of felt like a reduced member of society. And, you know, I don't want to be there again. If I had to go there again, I could at least call on remembering what that was like. But I think of all these young people that thankfully were born into a completely different world, that those options were real, and them having to shift into this space of being feeling prohibitive again. I can't imagine what that's going to be like or what that will do, how that will, you know, be a detriment to their growth. And it just all makes me, it's tragic when you think about it. I mean, there's really no other word for it. You know, and it just seems like, and I can only speak for myself, but it seems like everyone in this room knows that feeling of one step forward, two steps back. And honestly, you just get so tired of it. You feel like there's this moment, there's this glimpse of, okay, we're on a good path. These things have happened. These things have passed. But then so quickly they go backwards. You're like, can we please stop doing this? Like, you get tired after a while, and that leads you to be complacent, which is the last thing we need to be.
Giovanna, what worries you the most?
People dying, just to be their authentic selves, because in this moment right now, today, trans men and women across the country are dying just to be their authentic selves. They're being denied gender-affirming medications, hormone replacement therapy, surgeries, the rights of just surviving is being threatened in their lives right now. So my biggest concern is people losing their lives, continuing to lose their lives in even greater numbers. It's a Mayday moment. It's a time to react, and it's a time to stand up and fight for your right to breathe at this moment, because Project 2025, as Jake said, is very, very serious and it's very real. And it can get real for not just trans folks, but everyone in this country who is looking to be equal, to have the rights to just live. So that's my greatest concern, is the continuation of people dying when they don't have to.
We're going to talk in the next couple of weeks about Project 2025, and I want to make sure I continue to read and understand it. I think it is the project of the Heritage Foundation, which is supporting Donald Trump very heavily, and the Heritage Foundation's president has said that he expects Trump to win and enact this project's mission. It would include firing federal employees that oppose right-wing policies. It would end access to abortion and contraception, eliminate protections, many protections for LGBTQ people. The document calls for erasing LGBTQ inclusive language throughout all federal agencies, such as the term sexual orientation and gender identity, the term diversity, the term equity, the term inclusion, the term gender equality, gender equity, gender awareness, abortion, reproductive health, and reproductive rights. All would be eliminated from federal language. And that's the start. I mean, we'll cover it more extensively, but some of what you heard Giovanna and Jake talking about is
is right there. And the group is very, very public about what they want to do and what they expect to be enacted. So you'll hear more about that soon here. Terrence, what worries you the most?
Definitely where we're going as a society. You know, we're in a very crazy political climate, and I'm not the most political person, but that stuff is so exhausting to me. But definitely where we're going is worrisome. And I'm a parent, so I'm always thinking about, you know, what is the world going to be like for my kid? He's 9, so I'm always thinking about what is the world going to be like for him the next 5 years, the next year, the next 6 months. So I worry about that. And so as a parent, all I can do is just continue to, you know, try to make his world, his existence, as it is, as he sees it, the best I can do. And but I worry about the community that I serve. I worry about, you know, what if Medicaid gets wiped out tomorrow? What are we gonna do? Like, what if, you know, what if resources dry up? Like, what are we gonna do? So there are things I worry about in terms of community based resources and things of that nature. So and then you have things like Project 25 to kind of loom over our heads. So, but
how old is your child?
He's 9.
Nine.
Yeah.
Was just talking at lunch with some colleagues about a book that has not been published. I've seen advanced copy, and it's kind of a humor memoir. But the first line of the book is, "On my 18th birthday, my father gave me a bill for my childhood." Which is a pretty funny line. You can imagine on your 18th birthday, your parents saying, "Okay, this has been hard. Here's what you owe me. Here's what I've spent. Here's what you owe me." And some of our colleagues were laughing, but one of our colleagues said, "Well, you know, nobody asked the child if they wanted to be born, and right. What world are we bringing them into?" And it had me thinking about that. And now you're talking about a 9-year-old, and you're, how often do you think, "Look, I love you, and I want you to have the best, most secure future. But if things go sideways, like..." You love your child. You would never imagine your child not being born, right? But and I've got a 12-year-old, so I think about the same things. But like, I just think, I just want a secure world for you to be happy in.
That's it.
Like mm-hmm. That's it. Like, I don't need all the privilege in the world for you. I just want you to have a secure world to be happy in. Mm-hmm. And if that doesn't happen, the amount of guilt I think I will feel is pretty profound.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you think about that. You think about those things. So that's why, you know, as a parent, you know, we do the best we can to provide for him, and you know, he's a good kid. He's good.
He's doing all right.
He's doing excellent. excellent.
He's got you. He's got a lot of love. Sam, what worries you the most?
Oh, selfishly, my own immigration status. I think I got a target on my back for sure, but also survival and the well-being of my community. I mean, it's, you know, we're being raised as it is right now, and then this just further brings that to a new level. I mean, Jake was saying this feels very extreme to talk about this, but like, it felt extreme in 2016 to talk about Roe v. Wade being overturned, and here we are.
When you say extreme, I think how I hear that is unrealistic or maybe hyperbolic.
Right.
You know, like, are we really? But you're right. I mean, and I had the Republican gubernatorial candidate of New York State chastised me on this program saying, "Why do you keep asking about Roe v. Wade? It's the law of the land. Nobody's even talking about overturning it. You're just trying to gin up all this fear." And here we are.
Here we are.
So I
decided to worry about my community being erased and people surviving and being able to. But I also, it's uplifting to me to see our community come together now. And trying to make preemptive plans. This is, what farm are we moving all together into ourselves to be away from this madness?
I serious question here. Do you think there would be kind of communitarian living and some people actually making change?
Absolutely.
I think so.
I've actually talked to people who have already have things in place and people who have donated land and teaching people how to grow food on that land to accommodate a new community, a safe community from the outside world. So, yes, there are people talking about it across the country.
I think one of the most constants with our community has been creativity. And, yeah, we'll get creative. And to Giovanna's point, I think we consider more of these things than people even realize, you know, and so I think there are absolutely some plans in place.
Yep.
Well, I want to thank our guests for being here for the hour. RochesterPride.com is the website.
Mm-hmm.
to get the full agenda, what's coming up here, agenda. How often have you been accused of having an agenda? I just used the word agenda. I mean like a schedule of events. Although I know you all have this nefarious agenda.
So you have to come to the tent this year.
What's
you,
that?
You were invited to the tent last year.
I got to come to the tent.
You had a soccer game or something.
No, it was coaching baseball.
You were coaching, I right. Know. I knew it was some kind of sporting event. Man. So you have to come this year.
And it's Saturday the 20th?
Saturday the 20th.
The evening? All day?
They're probably going to kick off an hour 10 around like 1-ish.
Okay. All right. Terrence, you're right. Terrence,
so you owe me. You owe me from last year.
There's no excuses. There's like 50 events going around.
Right.
So.
Yeah. The events, the information, rochesterpride.com. This coming Sunday, Genesee Valley Park, noon to 6, the annual Pride Picnic. And then the parade, right to the festival, 11 to 6 for the festival, 11 a.m. for the parade. It's on South Avenue. It's a new location. They're all very excited, and they're going to have a great time. And then they're in Bykirk Park there as part of Highland Park for the festival. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you very much here.
Thank you.
Sam, Brett, and Giovanna Davis, the Marshalls. Thank you, Marshalls. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Terrence Pleasant from the Mocha Center at Trillium Health. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And our thanks to Jake Purcell from Trillium as well. Thank you, Jake.
Thanks, Evan.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Please be safe out there wherever you are today, and we're back with you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.